I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. It's hard to get reliable facts and figures about homeschooling in the United States. Parents in some states are not required to tell districts that they are teaching their kids at home and what subject material they are using. Only about half of the states require an assessment of what homeschooled children are learning. In a majority of states, homeschooling parents are not required to have a high school diploma or its equivalent. Pennsylvania recently loosened its restrictions and requirements on homeschooling. Our guest, Metoko Rich, K-12 education reporter for the New York Times, wrote about this in a recent article and joins us on Radio Times. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So why did you pick Pennsylvania?
Well, I had noticed a little news item about the change in the law. And Pennsylvania had, up until then, been one of the strictest states in the country in terms of what it required of homeschooling families. And one of the things it did require was at the end of every year, the family had to assemble a portfolio of its students' work. And in addition to submitting it to a private evaluator hired by the family, they would also have to submit that portfolio to the school district for review by someone in the school district office. And the change in the law last October eliminated that final requirement. So that was sort of what got me interested in looking in the whole landscape of homeschool regulation. And that's why I chose Pennsylvania for a start.
And let me go back to Pennsylvania. And I know at least before this law, people had to register with the district. They had to have a study plan. Are those still in place in Pennsylvania?
Yes. In Pennsylvania, that's still in place. You have to register every year with your school district of your intention to homeschool your children. And there is some kind of affidavit that you have to file. Depending on the district, there are certain details that you have to fulfill. But they include things like your plan of study, confirming that no adult in the household has a criminal record. And that's vastly different from a number of other states. There are a lot of states, including Oklahoma, your next-door neighbor New Jersey, Texas, that does not require people to register with any government agency that they're homeschooling.
As you look across the country, are there efforts then in states to loosen any kind of regulation or requirement for homeschooling? Do you see that as a trend?
I do, absolutely. And what's interesting about the homeschooling community, like any community, is it's incredibly diverse. There are groups of people who are homeschooling for religious reasons or because they want to give a certain kind of moral instruction to their children. There are others who object to the way their students are taught in public schools or even in private schools. There are others who want the flexibility of being able to travel and have a totally different educational plan for their students. Yet the single most powerful political body right now, represented by one, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which you have invited on your show, representative,
yes.
They're sort of pushing for deregulation of homeschooling. And although there are other organizations and advocates saying that maybe perhaps there should be more regulation, at the moment the trend has been toward deregulation.
In fact, you write that this organization, and we'll be talking to its founder in a couple of minutes, but that this organization, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, did help in write some of this legislation in Pennsylvania.
They did. DeWitt Black, who I quote in my story, who's one of a senior attorney with the organization, had written a bill about 10 years ago, I think, and it took a long time of lobbying to finally get the bill that eventually passed last year. But he said that he had written the original bill on which the bill that eventually passed was modeled. And there are other states in which attorneys for the organization have also written bills.
As I said, and as you have written and others have said as well, it's really hard to get a lot of firm facts and figures on homeschooling because of these various regulations. Are we talking, do you think, about something like 2 million children?
Well, the most recent federal data in which the U.S. government did a random survey of families around the country came to around 1.8 million. And most people who follow the homeschooling movement say that they think it's at least up to about 2 million. But like you said, it's very difficult to get accurate figures, particularly in those states where families are not required to register. So there's no way of any government body knowing that those families even exist.
You wrote about a family, Farrah Wiles and her son. Help us understand a little bit about what you saw as you watched that homeschooling.
So Ms. Wiles herself was homeschooled. She had gone through very severe bullying in high school, and so her mother had pulled her out to homeschool her, and she felt that she'd had a good experience. She did enroll in community college and took a course there, and then got pregnant and decided to homeschool. When he became five, she decided to homeschool him as well. And she talked about how he had certain issues, that he might have problem focusing if he were to be sitting in a classroom all day. And so that was one of the reasons why she thought it might be appropriate for her son. And she certainly was very flexible in terms of the curriculum that she was offering him and the sort of time that she required him to be sitting still. And she would talk to me a lot. And while I was there, she sent him upstairs to play Minecraft. And she talked about one of the great things about homeschooling was having that flexibility during the day, that when he was getting nervous, that she could, or anxious, or needed to let off some energy, she could give him a diversion.
Well, and it is about parents feeling as if they are the best educators for their particular children.
Absolutely. I heard that many times when I talked to a lot of families, not all of whom I could quote in the story, that the primary reason that they were doing this is they felt that they had a very strong conviction about what they wanted to do in the education of their children, and that they felt that they were the best educators for their children, and that nobody cared about their children more than they do.
And do you see this as a kind of a protest against the education system that we have in this country?
I think in some cases, I definitely interviewed a number of people who had said that they were very disappointed in the education that their children had previously received in the public school system, and so had withdrawn their children. Some of the people that I talked to, like Farrah Wiles or even Rhonda Santoro, had preemptively decided at a very early stage in their children's educational career to homeschool them. But there were some people I talked to who were pulling kids out of third or fourth grade. It even happens later in the stage. There were people who talked about their objection to what they saw as excessive testing. There were also people who were upset with the curriculums that had been ushered in as a result of the new Common Core standards that had been adopted by more than 40 states.
You quoted Jim Buckheit. We've had him on Radio Times. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Association of School Administrators.
Right.
What was his response, I guess, to the loosening of at least one of these requirements?
Well, the association officially objected to the change in the Pennsylvania law. His point was that the superintendents are charged by the Constitution of Pennsylvania with guaranteeing that all students or all children in the state receive an adequate education. And while that doesn't necessarily mean that every child must attend a Pennsylvania public school, he felt that there needs to be some kind of government oversight of all education. And his point was that it wasn't in fact all that strict. It was just asking parents to show evidence that they had been teaching their children during the year, submit a portfolio that would be reviewed first by an evaluator and then by a superintendent, so that if there were any problems, perhaps a school district official or a teacher or a curriculum supervisor could give feedback to the family and help guide anybody who might be off track.
Is there a state that has the least requirements or restrictions for homeschooling?
There are many, many states that have virtually no requirements. Oklahoma is particularly loose in terms of there are no requirements for registering with any government agency that the family intends to homeschool. There are no official requirements that the parents have at least a high school diploma in order to homeschool. There are no requirements about what subjects must be taught. So it is a fairly free state in which to homeschool.
It's interesting. We're getting lots of comments and calls as well. And not surprisingly, a Facebook comment from Adam: with freedom comes responsibility, because a few might do a poor job. That doesn't mean we should all have fewer choices. And it is, you know, I think for some people, it is a feeling that this is my right. I get to decide how I'm going to school my child.
Absolutely. And I think there is a slight misunderstanding in the notion that some level of oversight is depriving people of choice. I don't think anybody was saying that families do not have the right to homeschool, do not have the right to set the curriculum, to choose a pedagogical approach, to design the schedules of their students. They're just saying that there needs to be some kind of oversight to make sure that the children are receiving an adequate education.
Does anyone know if children who are homeschooled, for instance, do better, get into college at a higher rate, or have the skills to get employed at a higher rate compared to other
Right.
students?
Well, that's an excellent question. And there are some studies that show that homeschool students do perform better on some standardized tests and do get into college at higher rates. But the problem with those studies is they rely entirely on a voluntary population. So you don't know if you're capturing a representative sample of the homeschooling community or just those who volunteer to participate in that particular study.
We'll be talking with someone in a couple of minutes about some of the concerns that they have about homeschooling. But what about children who are at risk? Perhaps they're in dangerous households, for instance. Did you find that in any of your reporting?
Well, one of the arguments that I had heard from Rachel Coleman, who you are talking to later, is precisely that, that there are children at risk, that some parents might use homeschooling as a way to kind of hide from authorities. Because one of the things services that schools provide is that teachers, administrators, guidance counselors are all, at the term of art is mandatory reporters, meaning if they suspect that there is some kind of problem at home, they have to report to a social services agency. And if a child is not attending school every day, there aren't a lot of other adults around to observe what might be changes in the child's behavior that suggest that there's something wrong at home. That being said, there's no way to have to prove that homeschooling families are more likely to abuse their children than families who still send their children to school. There are incidences and anecdotal reports of families that, in fact, used homeschooling as a way to shield the fact that they were abusing their children at home. But there are plenty of children, alas, who are also getting abused,
sure,
despite the fact that they're being sent to school.
I'm curious about the response to the piece that you had in the New York Times, Motoko.
Well, there was an overwhelming response. There were almost 1,000 comments on the website.
Wow.
And what was so interesting to me is that it was sort of a fairly equal response from both sides. There were many people like your commenter on Facebook who were saying this is our choice and we have the responsibility. Who has more responsibility to take good care of their children than their parents? We don't want government oversight. Part of the reason some of us pulled our students out of public schools is precisely because we don't want the government involved in our children's education. On the flip side, there were many people who said, just because there are a lot of people who are incredibly responsible and good educators doesn't mean all of them are. And some minimal level of oversight guarantees a floor for all children.
We're almost out of time here. I'll read another Facebook comment from Anthony. He says, I'm torn. We need a way to measure schooling, home, or institutional, but standardized tests measure just one type of intelligence. And as you were saying, Motoko, is a number of people are just so frustrated with the amount of testing and the kind of testing in school that they see homeschooling as a way to opt out.
Right. I mean, I think that is a trend, and that is an issue that the public educational community is going to have to confront. And that is something that's going to be a big, huge amount of debate this year, because the federal law, No Child Left Behind, is up for reauthorization. And they're going to be rediscussing how to change the law and what role testing should play in that.
Well, thank you for getting our conversation started. That's Motoko Rich, K-12 education reporter for The New York Times. Motoko, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And do stay with us. We will carry on this conversation talking about homeschooling. And we have Rachel Coleman from the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we are talking about the homeschooling movement, and we want to hear from you. We've already gotten a lot of Facebook comments. We want to hear from you. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me introduce our second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. Rachel Coleman was homeschooled, in fact, was homeschooled K-12, and she founded the Coalition for Responsible Home Education with several other alumni. This was back in December 2013 in an effort to improve homeschooling for current and future homeschooled children. Rachel Coleman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Sounds like you got a great education. You were homeschooled by your parents.
I did get a pretty good education. There, my mother had a college education herself and placed a very high value on education. And so she basically treated homeschooling us as her career and threw herself into it and really worked hard. I mean, I have a sister with Down syndrome, and my mother would go and get books specifically for how to teach children with Down syndrome. You know, she, whatever the issue was, kind of went all out in trying to find the best way to educate that specific child. And, you know, even with a mom who did as much as she did, it's not that there weren't any deficiencies. What I really like about my mom is that she listened to feedback on that front. For instance, once I was in college, I told her that learning math from textbooks, just teaching it to myself like I did in high school, but I realized now that I had actual classes that that really hadn't worked very well. And it had kind of made me dislike math because I didn't understand it. Mm. And so based on that feedback, she got a math tutor for some of my younger sisters. So, you know, I really appreciate that she was willing to listen to that feedback, willing to really put the effort in providing a good education.
And I'm curious why your parents did not want to send you and your siblings to a brick and mortar school.
Well, initially it was actually because I took long, long naps and she didn't want to send me to full day kindergarten, which was the only option where we lived. So she initially planned to only homeschool me for kindergarten, but it went so well that year that she decided to continue homeschooling. And she used to tell us that they would reevaluate every year to see if, you know, it made sense to put us in school. And ultimately they did develop additional reasons, both religious reasons and academic reasons for homeschooling us.
Did you participate in extracurricular activities at your local school, for instance?
We did not. We were not allowed to by state law, which is a big problem in a lot of states. So actually, my brothers, my mom really wanted to have them in sports, and she ended up having to have them do a club sport at a local school, and it was only allowed. They were only allowed to do it because it didn't count as an official sport under the high school, you know, organization rules of the state for athletics. And so that created a bit of a problem. I was in a number of co-ops, but I mainly socialized with other homeschoolers, mm-hmm. Which was then weird for me when I came to college because there were so many people who were very different. So I think if public schools were a bit more open to that kind of thing, including individual classes, there are some states like Florida that allow homeschoolers to come in and pick an individual class. Like you could go take a math class or a chemistry class, and that's it, at the local public school. And I think those things present really good opportunities for homeschool kids. And I know people in states that do allow that who have taken advantage of that and really benefited from it.
How do you define, then, responsible home education? What should that include?
Responsible home education should be child-centered, positive, and should prepare children for the future, whether in the workforce or in college. It should prepare them both educationally and be healthy, you know, not an abusive or you know, sort of negative home environment. Positive, child-centered, preparing them for the future.
And what kind of training or education should parents have in order to be able to teach their children at home?
Currently, we recommend requiring parents to have a GED or high school diploma. Currently, in 39 states, parents are not required to have a GED or high school diploma or anything of that sort.
I mean, a GED, high school diploma, I mean, that can get you so far. I have a bachelor's. I cannot imagine teaching algebra to my child.
Well, absolutely. And this is why there should be accountability in place. We believe in things like portfolio requirements, where you have to put together a portfolio and show your child's progress. The way I see it, by the time a homeschooled child reaches high school, homeschooling should be about facilitating that child's education. The parent does not have the content knowledge to teach each subject, absolutely. But there are tutors, there are sometimes classes. We never took advantage of this, but there was a homeschool chemistry class that one dad who was a chemistry teacher actually taught chemistry to a bunch of homeschooled students. So there are options like that. Some homeschooled students will also take a class at the local community college, or like we already mentioned, at a local high school. So basically, seeing homeschooling is not just the parent teaching the child, but also facilitating that child's education through other sources.
But it sounds like you're saying there needs to be more coordination between parents and their schools and the willingness to perhaps work together on the education of a child.
Absolutely. In 11 states, parents don't even have to provide any notice to the local school that they're homeschooling. And then only half of all states require any form of assessment. And of those, most of them have sort of different loopholes and workarounds. So there are only seven or so states that have an assessment mechanism that actually requires progress. Believe it or not, there are half a dozen or so states that require the parents to have the kids assessed, but not to turn the assessment into anyone.
Huh.
So there's a huge problem on that front where in most states, the parents never have to show any evidence at all that their children are learning anything.
How concerned are you that there might be some children being homeschooled who are at risk for things like abuse?
Oh, there absolutely are. I mean, take the case of Hannah Williams, for example. She was murdered by her parents in 2011 for, according to her parents, being rebellious. But she'd been abused by her parents for years. She was adopted, and they treated her very badly, had her eat separately from the family, and actually deprived her of food to the point that she lost a significant amount of weight. But she was homeschooled, so there was nobody for her to talk to, nobody to notice the trauma she was going through. Or there was a 14-year-old girl in Arizona who was locked in her bedroom, an empty bedroom, for 15 months and regularly raped by her father. Hmm. She only escaped by breaking out of the house when her parents weren't home, running 2 miles to the home of someone she'd known before when she was in public school, and calling 911. So we know these cases are there. We actually have an entire database called Homeschooling's Invisible Children with nearly 300 extreme cases like these, and currently over 100 deaths that we've logged since 2000 among children who are homeschooled by abusive parents who use homeschooling to isolate them, or in the case of the Arizona girl, use homeschooling to get a sex slave, in essence. So there's very little oversight that prevents any of this. Only two states bar parents who are sex offenders from homeschooling. Only one state bars parents who are convicted child abusers from homeschooling.
How, though, these are horrific cases, of course, and I mean, as we all know, child abuse is far too common in this country, whether children are homeschooled or even sent to schools outside of their home. How common do you think that is for homeschooled children, and how could they be protected?
Excellent question. There's a couple pieces here. First of all, as far as how common it is, we, in our database, have been looking at the number of fatalities. When we compare it to the percentage of school-age children who die from child abuse each year and the percentage of children who are homeschooled each year, we've already had a higher number of fatalities than would be expected for the population size, if we assumed that fatalities would be constant across education methods. So we already know that homeschoolers are at increased risk of dying of child abuse, and that's with very limited data. We have not gained access yet to any comprehensive databases, and that is in our near future. We have that planned. As far as how we can prevent that, one very simple thing we could do is to flag families who have a history of social services involvement or recent child abuse reports. There's a pattern we've noticed among some of these cases where parents will pull a child from school after a teacher has shown that they're willing to report the abuse. And the case may be found unsubstantiated or closed due to a lack of parental cooperation after homeschooling begins, because it's harder for teachers to gain, or for social workers to gain access to that child, whereas they could go to school at dismissal time, say, if the child attended school, to gain access to that child. So just a system to flag these cases so that then there could be a risk assessment done, sort of additional monitoring every so often to ensure that that homeschooling is not taking place to hide abuse. And there's so many children that of these cases we found, where they pull after the reports to prevent future reports. I mean, Jeanette Maples, Christian Chody, Nubia Barahana, these are children who've died in that exact case.
But can
so
we?
That's a simple thing we could do.
I hear you, and I do want to get to some callers, but are you saying that most children are at risk homeschooled, or these are obviously very disturbing cases, but minority cases?
Most homeschooling parents, I mean, obviously the data, there's not hard data to answer this question, but most homeschooling parents, we believe, are not abusive.
Right.
The problem is when an abusive parent does homeschool, homeschooling is a powerful tool for them to isolate that child and abuse that child further. And as a homeschooling alumni, I am horrified that there are people who use homeschooling to harm children like this. And I would like to see other children have the same positive experience that I had, and that's part of why I founded the Coalition for Responsible Home Education.
And that's Rachel Coleman. She was homeschooled, in fact, homeschooled by her parents, K through 12, and is the head of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. Let me get to some callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like a lot of comments on our Facebook page. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What do you think of homeschooling? Should there be some degree of oversight and regulation? We want to hear from you. Let me get Sylvia first from University City. Sylvia, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've homeschooled my kids since the beginning here in Philadelphia, partly because my husband, who had gone to Philadelphia public schools, didn't feel positive about putting them into the system. And it's been a good experience for us. I know that it doesn't always work out for folks, as some of your callers or your guests have said. But I wanted to respond to your first caller about the oversight provided by the superintendents when portfolios were turned in.
Right.
I've been turning in portfolios for like 8 years now. And in the first 5 years, I never once sat down with someone who looked at my portfolio with me or gave me any feedback. They simply took it from me. They didn't even issue me a receipt. I had to take my own receipts to prove I'd even turned it in. And three times I got it back with no feedback. A couple times I got it back with merely a checklist that they'd checked off that I'd met some points. And once they made a comment telling me I needed to do things that weren't required by the homeschooling law, so it seemed to me like I kind of knew more about what was required of me than they did. I will say, to be fair, that in the last 3 years, since they've been being turned into the centralized school district with the man named Sean White, I believe is his last name, he's been great, and he has sat down and given feedback. But I approve of this change in the law because it's a lot of extra work and hassle to go physically take a...
Whoops. I'm sorry, Sylvia. For some reason, we lost your call. But I appreciate the call. And she raises a really interesting point, Rachel. We were talking about the relationship. Hopefully, do we still have Rachel? Yes. Do we
still have...
Okay. Sorry. The important relationship between someone who's homeschooling and the district. And here's someone who sounds like they were doing what was not only required, but what they felt was best for their child and not getting the right kind of feedback until now about what was in their portfolio. Do you think this is a common complaint?
I have seen a complaint before that school districts don't always know what the law says. And frankly, we have found this to be the case sometimes in making calls to try to clarify certain things about the law, and we have different legal briefs and such. And so there can be confusion. And we think that's one thing that, you know, the best interest of the homeschooled children is to, you know, break through that confusion. We would like to see more homeschooling superintendents or more superintendents, school superintendents, educated on what the law says and what the requirements are and willing to give the sort of feedback that homeschooling parents would like. That feedback is really important. And I think that answers the question.
I think
it
does.
Absolutely. No. Improving the relation between the homeschooling family and the school is important.
Absolutely. Sylvia, thanks for calling in. I'm sorry that your call got dropped. Let me read a Facebook comment. This is from Eliza. She says, of course, no one cares about our children as much as we do. We are their parents. I don't send my children to school. I don't send my children to school because I think their teachers care more about them than I do. I send them to school because their teachers are qualified to teach them, and I am not. And I think, Eliza, I would include myself in that. I think most parents would probably agree with that.
Again, this goes back to what I was saying about, being facilitators of your children's education as a homeschooling parent and not just teaching every subject. But I do agree that not every parent is qualified or able to homeschool their children. I mean, it takes an incredible amount of work to do all the research, to put in all the effort, to create the curriculum, to find the opportunities, to ensure the children have the socialization experience they need, to write the children's transcript. You have to write their high school transcript. It takes a lot of work to do all of that. But I would also take, go into one other thing that commenter said.
Sure.
It is, not every parent is, there are abusive parents. There are, neglectful parents. We can say that, no one cares more about my children than I do. And I understand that as a parent. I have two children of my own. But there are parents out there who homeschool to abuse their children or who educationally neglect their children. I mean, to give you an example, homeschooling parents are responsible for writing their children's transcripts. As I noted, there are homeschooling parents who use that to control their children long past adulthood, where they will deny their child their transcript just to control and hurt and manipulate and abuse them. Or they will say, you can only have your transcript if you attend this Christian college that we've picked out. Or you have to stay home, you're not ready yet, and keep a child home until they're 23 even though they've completed the requirements. It's just the parents stringing them along. So not every parent acts in the best interest of their child. I mean, we recently had a 29-year-old homeschool alumni contact us. She needs her diploma to be able to graduate, or her transcript, to be able to graduate from community college. She's been taking community colleges, classes, you can do that without your transcript, but to graduate, you need proof of completing high school, at least at the one she's at, and her abusive mother is refusing to give her that. She's 29, and her mother is still controlling her. So it's not actually true that every parent will act in the best interest of their children. You know, it may usually be the case, but unfortunately, the cases where it's not, I mean, things can go so badly wrong when you throw homeschooling into that.
You were homeschooled by your parents. You have two children. They are not homeschooled. And tell us why not, Rachel.
Well, currently, public school is what is working best for all of us. The school she's in is an excellent school. She's thriving. I'm able to have the time to do other work. And it's what fits for her and for our family. I believe that the education method that fits the child is what should be chosen, not fitting the child to any specific education method. If there's a future time when public school is not working for her, we will look into other options. I'm not opposed to ever homeschooling, but it should be about what works for the child and the parent, not just some arbitrary choice that you make at the beginning, regardless of what works for the child.
We're almost up on a break here. I'm looking at some of the material from your organization. We believe that parents or guardians should be allowed to choose how to educate their children, but not whether to educate their children, an important distinction.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's part of the problem in many of these states with such low oversight, whether to educate their children is in the hands of the parents. I mean, there are 14 states that don't require parents to teach any specific subject. It'd be legal for them not to teach any math or, not to teach their children to read or whatever it is. 14 states. The question is how to educate, not whether. Absolutely.
And let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Rachel Coleman, and she's the founder of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. We'll be joined by Michael Ferris, Chancellor of the Patrick Henry College, Chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, who'll be joining us after this very short break. And we want to hear from you, your opinions about homeschooling. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. I've been talking with Rachel Coleman. She is a homeschool graduate who founded the Coalition for Responsible Home Education with several other alumni. This was back December 2013 in an effort to improve homeschooling for current and future homeschooled children. Joining us now is Michael Ferris. He's the chancellor of the Patrick Henry College and chairman of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And Michael Ferris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. What is the mission of your organization?
Homeschool Legal Defense Association has been in operation for 31 years. Our goal is to promote the legality of homeschooling, to make sure that parents who want to responsibly homeschool their children have the right to do so.
Your organization was quoted in the New York Times article about Pennsylvania and homeschooling. The quote from the New York Times, from someone from your organization, what we want, what we would like is for there to be total hands-off policy. Is that the policy of the association, that when it comes to homeschooling, it should be total hands-off?
Well, I think in the context of Pennsylvania law, which had one of the two most draconian laws in the country, very, very heavy on multiple examples of paperwork that was required that the school districts didn't look at. There's basically two approaches to the law. Either you try to regulate everything in advance, and in general First Amendment law, that's called a prior restraint, or you punish people after the fact who abuse their rights. Mm-hmm. And so our approach overall is that we want to do away with prior restraints and we affirm the necessity and the appropriateness of government punishing those who misuse their rights. So, for example, that Rachel said, the only part of the interview I heard with Rachel was a very brief thing where she said that 14 states don't require you to teach math. Well, that, you know, is simply whether there's a statutory prior restraint on that requirement. Every state requires you to provide education for your child. And if you didn't teach your child math during 12 years of education, I guarantee you you'd be prosecuted for educational neglect. And you would. And I could not successfully defend any parent that failed to teach math in any state. So the question is, are we going to punish people up front and make everybody go through a regulatory system, or are we only going to punish people after the fact? Now, the other thing...
Wait, you know what? Let me just stop you there, just because, and I do want to give Rachel a chance to weigh in as well. It's interesting you use the word punish. By putting in regulations, is that really punishing parents? And, for instance, in Pennsylvania, you need to register with the district. You need to have some kind of study plan. There need to be some background checks on adults. An end-of-year review of the material that was either covered or learned. Do you see those as punishments?
Well, whenever you're requiring people to do paperwork for the exercise of their freedom, historically, it's always been understood, and I'm surprised that a journalist would be unfamiliar with the idea of prior restraints. Prior restraints, whenever you're exercising a fundamental right, the government shouldn't be able to review and license you in advance. That's the basic principle here. And that's true for public, for education is a right of not only religious freedom, but mainly a freedom of speech. Teaching is the exercise of the freedom of speech. And so the question is, in a free country, are we going to try to regulate speech? We have to ask ourselves, what good does it do to have a requirement that says you have to teach math? If you only taught a child to add two-digit numbers, and that was the extent of your math instruction, that would you would satisfy a curricular requirement that Rachel's advocated, that every state say you must teach math. That doesn't make any sense. What you want is adequate preparation for life, and you need to have more than just a basic two-digit addition in arithmetic. You need to have adequate mathematics. You can't write laws that way. You can't write laws that dictate the details. You punish people who abuse their freedom. You don't try to nitpick, regulate people's lives up front. And the intrusion upon our freedoms, I believe, is a form of punishment.
And when you talk about freedoms, this is the parents' freedom to teach what they want and how they want to teach it?
Yeah, I mean, that freedom, by the way, is recognized in the international law documents like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the ICCPR, the International Covenant on Economic Social Rights, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. It's the most basic rights of that are internationally recognized, which, you know, I'm just using this as a way of illustration. I don't believe that our rights come from this, but it's how widely recognized this is. And according to the ICESCR, a UN treaty, it says that education should be according to the parents' moral and religious convictions. That's right there in the ICESCR. So I'm not making something up that's some draconian right-wing conservative thing. That's the UN talking. The UN agrees with Mike Ferris on this particular point. And if Rachel wants to disagree with the UN and human rights documents, she has she's just out of step.
Well, hold on one second, because I do want to give Rachel Coleman a chance to respond to some of the things that you have said, Michael Ferris. Rachel, your comments.
I've already stated that we do support the right of parents to choose how to educate their children. I'm not disagreeing with, you know, the UN statements here. When Mr. Ferris says that there are no states that don't require math, that's simply false. Utah repealed its subject requirements for homeschooled students last April, specifically so that homeschooling parents would not be required to teach any subject. That is what they did. The educational neglect statute in that state says that homeschooling parents have to be following the law. If they're not providing the education required by law, then they can be gotten for educational neglect. The law no longer requires them to teach anything. It is absolutely false that every state requires something like math. There are states that do not. Also, when Mr. Ferris talks about punching the parents who don't follow the requirements, how are you supposed to find those parents without an assessment requirement? HSLDA recently helped repeal Iowa's assessment requirement so that there is no longer an assessment on homeschooling parents. No one has, looks and sees whether they have provided the education. And by the way, I absolutely agree with Mr. Ferris that just saying teach math is not enough. This is why a number of states that do have subject requirements say things like commensurate with the children's ability or making, you know, some level of progress. They specify that there must be progress made. I totally agree. It should have to do with their ability, progress being made, and there should be requirements for high school, for example, like in Pennsylvania, that you have to provide, you know, this much chemistry, this much math, etc. Like, absolutely, it shouldn't be just teach some form of math. But the problem is that HSLDA, I mean, when Utah changed their law, HSLDA praised that change. Iowa, that was partly HSLDA's involvement to remove that assessment. So what I want to know from Mr. Ferris is, A, does he support subject requirements that say things like progress commensurate with their ability? And B, does he support assessment requirements that would allow the state to punch those parents after the fact, to use Mr. Ferris's word, if they are not following the requirements?
Let me give Michael Ferris a chance to respond to that, and I do want to get some more callers in. Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. On the basic question, what's our approach? We believe that parents who fail to adequately teach their children in a responsible fashion can and should be punished. That's our position. But we think that that should be done after the fact. And so when Rachel talks about the Utah example, repealing the subject requirements, they placed them, took them out of the prior restraint category, and they went to a freedom approach. I don't know how many educational neglect cases Rachel has been involved with directly. I've been in the courtroom many times on them. I guarantee you there is no court in this country that would ever let anybody get away with not teaching their kids math. I've been there. I've done that. I know these cases. I defend families. I would never tell a family, you can get away with not teaching math. In fact, I would never tell them you cannot teach math that fails to meet your child's ability and needs. If you're not doing what your child needs and is capable of doing, you are not going to have a successful defense in an educational neglect prosecution. And the way you find out those things, kids have grandparents, kids have neighbors, kids go to Sunday school, their teachers notice they can't read. We get numerous situations where families are reported on, and the number of reports that homeschooling families have because of the suspicious nature of various people who, you know, are doubtful of the abilities of homeschoolers. There's lots of accountability. It's the kind of accountability that's consistent with freedom and not the kind of accountability that's consistent with prior restraints. Would this radio station put up with the government reviewing its material in advance or even after the fact? The government, you have to file all your programs for the whole year and have the government approve whether or not you adequately adhere to your charter. Those would be violations of the freedom of press that I think we'd all understand. Freedom of speech, teaching is an exercise of the freedom of speech, and we don't require government reviews of the exercise of our freedoms either before or after, only when there's a reason to believe that somebody's done the wrong thing. That's when we intervene in people's lives. And we have to make a basic decision in this country. Are we going to be a regulated country because we're afraid of anybody making a mistake, or are we going to be a free country and only try to punish the people who do the wrong thing?
A quick response, Rachel, and I do want to get Barbara from Newark, Delaware, to join us.
Well, one thing I would say, well, first of all, it sounds like Mr. Ferris is not okay with assessment requirements. He says that people can report. People don't always report. There's a variety of reasons they don't report. Take Mitch Comer, for example, in Georgia. His neighbors did not know that he existed because his parents locked him in a room for 4 years with no access to his siblings or even sunlight and abused him and certainly didn't educate him. How could the neighbors have reported if they didn't know he existed? Or Teddy Tedesco, whose grandmother and biological father were completely cut off so that they had no access to him. How can parents report, if their access, or relatives report, if their access is completely up to the parents? We can't just
Rachel,
wait until
if you're going to take criminal cases.
Well, hold
like
on,
that.
hold on.
No.
I have to jump. Hold on. I have to jump in here only because we're okay. Running out of time, and I do want to get some callers in, and I hear the back and forth between the two of you. I hear the very different perspective that both of you were offering. Let me get Barbara from Newark, Delaware, to join us. Barbara, yeah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Great. The conversation that you're having today is really leaving out it's giving me the view that homeschoolers are sitting in a house, shut up, and taught all at home, and that just really is not the case. My son was homeschooled from grade 1 through 12 in Delaware, which doesn't have a lot of reporting requirements. He is now a junior at the University of Delaware, and his academic career was really a lot of different groups of homeschoolers that got together. And there were a number of resources in the community, classes at the local art museum, the Nature Center, that are geared to homeschoolers. He took a AP class with Pennsylvania homeschoolers. He took classes through Oak Meadow, distant learning classes. And there are a number of, family members that help with transcripts. So I think that is a really important point that is being missed today.
Well, Barbara, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and I think that's directed to you, Rachel. I mean, do you want people to have the impression that homeschooling is about problems?
Well, I believe I started off the segment by talking about my own positive academic experience and about homeschooling parents as facilitators. So I don't think that aspect is being missed. But we can't let people fall through the cracks at the same time. And that is why our organization was founded. We do not deny that homeschooling can be a wonderful experience. It absolutely can be. And we want it to be a wonderful experience for as many people as possible and to cut down on the number of cases where it is an incredibly negative experience. We hear from alumni on both sides. We're not trying to portray it as just a problem. We're simply saying there needs to be accountability there to protect children's interests, to ensure that homeschooling is not used to abuse or neglect.
Michael, I have an email for you from Neil. He says, a functioning democracy depends in large part on an educated citizenry. If there is little or no regulation, how can the public be confident that children are being adequately educated to participate in such a society? What do you say?
I testified in the United States Senate chamber on a presidential review panel on education. The person in front of me was Albert Shanker, who's passed away since then. He was the president of the American Federation of Teachers. He said that two-thirds of the public high school graduates in this country are functionally illiterate. They could not rank order seven basic fractions, nor could they write a simple paragraph that was cohesive. And now, if that's the result of the public education system, how in the world do we think those people can effectively, regulation by those people that have produced such a system, that they can effectively regulate homeschooling? The reality is that for every example that Rachel can pull out of her anecdote bag, the situation that Barbara described from Delaware, this young man, there are 10,000 just like that. And somebody who locks their kids in a box someplace, they're performing a criminal act. Do we really think that a law required them to register? That they would have actually registered? If they're going to perform those kind of crimes, it's nonsense to think that a registration requirement would have made a difference in those kind of criminal cases.
And Michael, only because we have a minute left, and I'm sorry to do that. I'm looking, though, but there are 11 states that do not require parents to provide at least noticing of homeschooling. Are you comfortable with that?
Yes, I am, because why does the government need notice that we're going to exercise our constitutional rights? I don't think that there's any necessity to it. Now, am I comfortable with states that require notice? Yeah, I'm okay with requiring notice one way or the other. But I think the reality is that the best notice system in the world are kids' grandparents, parents, uncles, neighbors, friends. That's the best notice system. And the notice systems tend to create paperwork. Well, we have to ask ourselves, does the notice system actually produce a material result that matters? I don't know of any situation where notice has really been the criteria for choosing between somebody who's failed and somebody who's been successful. So I only believe in laws that really make a difference and they're really productive and really effective. Making people do some legal requirement to make people feel good about something that doesn't really work, I'm not in favor of such a law.
Well, I wish we could go on, but we do have to end our conversation. Michael Ferris, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome.
Chancellor of the Patrick Henry College, Chairman of the Homeschool Legal Association. Rachel Coleman, thank you very much as well.
Thank you. And the only thing I would add is that children have rights, too. It's not just the parents. Children have rights, too.
And she is the founder of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. We did have a lot of people that wanted to join our conversation. You can carry on this conversation on our Facebook page. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and check out our homepage as well. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. And do stay with us. We'll be right back.